Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
We are back again.
That was a tough week last week, man.
Not so much the drinking, but the afterwards, like, oh god, yeah,
that was a little harder than we usually do, man.
Yeah, no, we usually it's just a bottle between the two of us. That time it was a bottle and then some,
and then some. That slapped. It slapped.
I'm so glad we got a chance to recover from that. That was, oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, don't know about you, but after you went home, I took a nap.
I wanted to, but no, I didn't get to take a nap. I did go to bed early. I will tell you that.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
Oh my gosh, they were great drinks. Yes. The cocktails were great.
They were a lot of fun.
And they were tasty. They were a lot of fun to make, and it was awesome. But whew.
There is a part of me that says, hey, Chris should do that again sometime. There's another part of me that goes, oh God.
Well, we're going to do it again. I think we should do it again because there are so many recipes out there and none of them look horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are just four really good ones I found. Mm-hmm. I want to do that more.
That'd right. Awesome. Maybe that's a quarterly thing. Like yeah. A seasonal kind of thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, if people keep sending us stuff, maybe we'll do more.
And one thing I talked about you one time before is we talked about, you know, in the key holders, we could evaluate meats they send to us, our key holders do.
That was an idea I floated.
Yeah,
and you floated. I don't remember who, but
I think I floated. I'm not going to be picky, but I don't care. But you know, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, no, and the getting Patreon up and running, and you know, the Patreon is not the end of the world either. We could look at maybe a coffee or Ko-fi, you know, the buy me a coffee thing where you just send a one time donation. We got options there. So I think we need to, you know, hey, if you guys at home listening, those of you, the you know, 20 or so more a week-ish that I'm seeing on our metrics, you guys are, you know, coming in and listening and getting ideas, and there's something you want from us. I mean, Chris and I are crafty guys. We could easily just come up with, hey, you know, a little wood burnt or 3D printed thing that says the Meat House appreciates your support, or you know, maybe you like read your name at the end of an episode to say, hey, thank you for supporting us, kind of a thing. But you got above and beyond ideas for you know, how to make this better. Let us know. Info at the Meat House, facebook.com at the Meat House. You know,
I'm delighted to see that I'm getting my phone says beep notification Meat House. I'm sitting there, woo, you know. It makes my day.
Even the little chatter on the comments for those episode releases is a lot of fun to listen to. Just see what people like and what people don't like. And, you know, the comparing between yourselves, cool as hell. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate having you guys join us here. Really appreciate it. Tell us what you want to hear. We're going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Our ability to talk is unlimited as far as we can tell.
And the random topics we can come up with is, you know, it feels limited sometimes, but at the end of the day, we're, you know, an episode a week. So
yeah, we're doing what we can.
We're
coming up on, like you said that before, we're coming up on 300 here, man.
It's coming real soon, next month.
It's a thing. So we're looking to hear at the last part of October, mm-hmm. Like 3 weeks in now, huh?
It's getting to be the best time of the year.
Okay. My wife would agree with you. But
I'm a little bummed because this year, like, my wife and I's friends are having a wedding on Halloween. And I'm so happy for them. It's going to be a great celebration, I'm sure. But I don't get to do the Halloween stuff.
Yeah, I get it, man.
So,
well, you know, they're friends. You know, you got to make little sacrifices here and there.
This year.
Yeah.
That can be about them.
They owe you.
This is not the first group of friends that have had their wedding on Halloween either.
Yeah, no.
I mean, this is well before Owen was like the age where he could walk around the neighborhood and trick or treat and stuff. We had another group of friends that like, I think it was maybe 2 years after our wedding. So Owen would have been about three. He might've been able to walk around and do stuff, but it was more like okay, well, we're going to take you to houses we know in the car and just have you run out and say trick or treat kind of thing. And they'll get pictures of little Owen kind of thing. But we had another group of friends that had a wedding that day. And so we went and did the Halloween party wedding, and it was a good time. But
yeah, the Halloween, man.
Yeah.
My own daughter to not be on Halloween, she did November 1st, mm-hmm. So she could ask for the weekend off on Halloween, her anniversary,
mm-hmm.
And she'd have Halloween off with her anniversary on the 1st.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I full marks for smart. All right. Other person we need to thank, other than our listeners, is Boxes and Barleycorn.
Yeah. They have been our sponsor since we got this thing back up and rolling. They asked us to sponsor us and to keep the podcast and the information to the internet at large, if you will, going.
Yeah, the community that just keep the information flowing. And we were more than happy to do it.
Right.
They were been big supporters.
They've been great to work with. And again, I don't know how many times I've said this. I'll keep saying this. The field of homebrew stores, local businesses helping people out is contracting.
And severely.
Big box stores, the online stores, they're taking over. I don't like it. It's the nature of the world. So getting to support a business that has been around for as long as they have and has been as useful to the community and has been such a fixture of the community for as long as they have,
it's nice.
It's
really something to be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been on it over 50 years. I think 57 at this point.
I want to say that's the number we arrived at. Yeah.
But it's we're a huge proponent. You know, even if they didn't sponsor us, we'd be talking about them because we get all our supplies there.
Right.
Jake and his buddies are really knowledgeable. They're really giving. They're more than glad to help you out in anything you need.
Mm-hmm.
And they have everything you need for everything fermentable. I mean, I like saying that because it's not about beer, meat, or wine. It's about cheese, kombucha, yogurt, and whatever else you can ferment.
They got it. Yeah, anything on with a microbiological process. It wouldn't surprise me if he started carrying like the little mushroom kits, like for making oyster mushrooms and stuff too.
He might do that sometime in the future. I haven't seen it yet, but you know,
it could happen, right? Totally possible. And hey, for those of you that are not in the Kansas City area and shopping online,
me or you.
You want to try it?
I'll try. Okay, you can use our code here, the Meat House Podcast. It's MHP10, and I have to think about it every freaking time that I got it. There was a hiccup because you took it last week, but that's still 7 in a row for me.
7 in a row on attempts, not on successes.
Okay, fair enough.
Last time.
Okay, fair enough. But there have been eight successes. I had 7 of them. Anyway.
Whatever makes you feel good at the end of the day.
That's about it. But you can get yourself 10% off your online order. And if, you know, Jake's there, bring it up. Who knows? He's a nice guy. He might just give it to you even in-house.
You know, between you, me, and the microphone here, there have been a time when I was working at Boxes and Barleycorn, and Jake was a customer, and he had happened to ask me if there was any kind of a way he could get a little discount.
You know?
I'm not going to say, you know, you can get a discount just for asking for it, but I certainly gave him a discount for lack of any good reason to, but, you know.
Yeah, but he asked, he got one, mm-hmm. So full circle, man, full circle.
Regular customers, you got to take care of them, and I think they understand it. I understood it working there. Jake understands it now. We all know if you're going to be there on the regular, you gotta support the people that are coming back to buy from
you. Right? And plus, you know, Jake, if you happen to come to the store, he'll share a nice drink with you that he's made in house,
mm-hmm.
and show you all kinds of things, your options, your hard ciders, your beer, mead, wine, distilling options. If you want to make your own,
if you come in with a question or if you bring in a bottle that you like, hey, I need some advice on XYZ. That's what they're there for, man. They're, you know, any step of the way, not just selling you the product to get you making stuff, but also like, hey, this isn't coming out exactly how I want it to. What can I do better?
Which is kind of the reason he sponsors us, because we're trying to help you make better mead.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go.
Yeah, exactly. No, they're great, great resource in the community. They're a great resource to us, and we're happy to work with them. I'm thrilled to be able to work with them. Yeah, let's get to the mead of the day.
Mead of the day. The mead of the day is actually from Sap House.
Mm-hmm.
It's Yorkshire's best traditional mead. We had a traditional last week because we had the mead my friend Brian made.
Right. This is from that Renaissance Fair release. This was the one at the main Renaissance Festival. We had a few weeks back, we had the Wild Rover, which was like a pumpkin spice kind of
mead. It was good, but kind of disappointing. I need more of the spice for me.
Right, and it wasn't a pumpkin mead. It was just the spices added to a traditional. I'm pretty sure this is the same traditional because they both have a blend of orange blossom and wildflower honey, and they're both 9%. So I'm fairly certain they made a big batch of a traditional and put spices in some of it and left some of it this.
And this is what I'm pouring right now.
Mm-hmm. And I happen to know for a fact, this is a perfectly reasonable way to, you know, accomplish mead making. Because Pirtle, up north of here,
mm-hmm.
maybe half an hour north, he makes one big batch of mead. And then from that, he'll add in, like, secondary or right before bottling, he'll add blackberry or raspberry or carbonated to make his full suite of traditional blackberry, raspberry, or carbonated meads.
Yeah.
So...
And actually, if you look online, there's guys that have done, what does this yeast do? They made like 20 different varieties of yeast,
mm-hmm.
all from the same batch of mead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's legit, guys. You know, it's a flexible world and we can do this. So what we got here is the Yorkshire Best traditional mead from Sap House. I'm getting a little bit of honey, a little bit of alcohol. I'm not smelling a whole lot there.
Yeah, the flavor is, the scent is light. I could say there's a little bit of a citrusy side to it in the honey.
Now, the bottle says on the drier side, a little closer to dry than it is to sweet.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, this is my wheelhouse more than yours.
Yeah. But you know, I've had some dry meads you've given me that I thoroughly enjoy, even though I'm not a dry mead guy.
Right. So. And as I get into more of this, I'm trying to do a little closer to the semi-sweet, the off-dry, and...
It's a light yellow,
mm-hmm.
very, very light. It's like, well, light straw.
You could call it medium straw, light amber, kind of. It's in that ballpark. It's very light. It's
really honest, not my favorite. I like a little more sweet with my mead than sure. this. This is a little drier than I like.
Yeah.
This it's is smooth.
This is an off dry. It's very smooth. Mm-hmm. It's very light. This is pleasant. This is the kind of thing that I would make just as a, you know, what do I want to say? Default. If I were making a traditional, this is kind of where I would shoot for. It's a little dry, but it's still got some sweetness. The honey presents itself, but not so much that it's candy sweet or even, you know, particularly sweet.
If I was making this traditional here, I'd aim much higher in the sweet category. Yes, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a bad meat? No, I will not say it's bad. It's smooth. It's easy to drink. But I'm not, and this is the reason I don't like dry as well as, you know, you do, man. I, you know, if I'm making it from honey, I want some sweet.
That's fair. I think, well, my comment from the Wild Rover before, this is a light mead. I could imagine enjoying this just, you know, especially, I don't know how the main Renaissance Festival goes, but I feel like there's two different phases of the Renaissance Festival here. And you and I have both worked entire runs at the fair.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first couple weekends are... in September, and they're ungodly hot in three layers of clothing because, you know, the Renaissance was a minor ice age
mm-hmm.
in the climate, you know, conditions, and we're trying to reflect that. So you end up, like, hoded in sweat and dust at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
On those kind of fair days, I could see this being a real easygoing, even if you're just, you know, going out there in, you know, cargo shorts and a t-shirt or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could see this being a pleasant way to just have something to sip on as you're walking the lanes and browsing the shops and checking out a joust or something like that. Hell yes.
And I agree. This is a very easy drinking. We can do it. All right. Now, the crux of the show is...
Topic of the day. A couple weeks ago, we talked about gruets and making a beer or a braggot without hops. This time... I want to talk about making a braggot specifically without gluten. Why? Well, a few weeks back, one of my wife's friends invited us to go to the Kansas City Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
There is a fairly big microbrewery out here, KC Beer Co., beer spelled B-I-E-R.
Okay.
And they do predominantly German styles of beer.
Fair enough.
Rather than, you know, just the whatever they think of, whatever's hot right now in the beer community, whether it's IPAs or whatever. And we're sitting out there having fun, and I got one of the liter size Moss Steins from the event because
you can.
Right. I have a problem and I accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And so
not a problem, it's a feature.
This isn't sales. You don't have to sell me on being an alcoholic. I know I'm solving problems with drinking alcohol.
But I support you.
sometimes I fall over and you support me a lot. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and this is, it's in the courtyard area at Crown Center. It's a big open space. They've got a bunch of vendors. They've got all their own beer products that, you know, they've got like a half a dozen different beers, like the Fest beer for Oktoberfest. They've got a Helles Lager. They've got a Dunkel. Probably like three others that I didn't get a chance to try because I was so busy, you know, enjoying myself.
When you get a liter at a time, it takes time.
Yeah, well, and you know, I had to drive home, so 2 liters was a max, even if I was going to sit and eat. And you know, we had there were like two or three different stages with music, including, wildly enough, there was a punk band there that Sheila and I like were freaking out about because they had an accordion in the band. It was amazing. I would not have believed you could do a punk band with an accordion, but it worked and it was so good. Anyway, we're sitting there. The girl that invites us, one of my wife's really close friends, co-workers, all that, and we're getting to the point where, okay, well, we need to go back to the beer tent and get more beer. And she's like, okay, well, give me a cider. Okay, what? Why a cider? And then I remembered she's gluten sensitive and she's been drinking cider all night. She invited us to a beer event
To
and
drink
didn't
cider.
drink any beer.
Okay. Yeah.
And
Well.
you know, this has come up a time or two in the distant past for this podcast, but making a beer gluten free, making a Braggot gluten free, so that you know she could go to a beer-ish event and enjoy a beer-ish thing, or just make something that has beer-like ingredients. How could we do that? And we
Okay.
just talked about making
You
a
grew it for hops, like for somebody like me.
right. So, you know, this is the flip side of that. And, you know, this is, again, we're kind of like looking at two different sides of things because with the Gruit, that was mainly a historical way of doing things. That was a something in the past that before we realized hops was the optimum thing to make with beer, right?
Oh, yeah.
There was all kinds of different herbs they were using to kind of make that work. This is a lot more modern look at, you know, making something that's accessible for everybody because
Yeah, I mean, because the percentage of gluten intolerant out there is kind of low. It's like 7%.
so based on the research that I've done on this topic, about 6% of the population
Okay, six.
is like has an intolerance to it or is affected by it. And then there's another 1% of the population that has like celiac disease,
Okay.
where celiacs will, based on the presence of gluten in your system, you will have an autoimmune response where your body will attack itself, which is
Ooh,
worse.
yeah, that's horrible.
And some of the, I'm not going to get graphic here. I don't want to get graphic here. You guys probably don't want to hear about some of the nasty stuff that can happen if you're not familiar with it. But
The bottom
the
line is it's a workaround.
right, for the gluten intolerant people even, bad stuff can happen if you have gluten. And
Mean, if your reaction is just to make you sore, like hops does to me, it just makes me incredibly sore, like I've been in a pillow fight with a professional fighter.
you're getting out good.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of, you know, GI related stuff, or you some people can have outright, you know, allergic reactions to it as far as like hives and crap like that. It's a broad spectrum of reactions here that are nasty. And so, you know, they have to work at this.
Yeah, they work around it. So yeah, well, cider is good now, but we can do a beer without gluten now, because oats, corn, rice, what else we got?
There's a few others. Millet, for example. Buckwheat is so what is gluten at the end of the
I
day?
honestly don't. It's a protein chain. That's all I really know
Yeah,
about it.
it's a protein chain, and it's a as a protein chain, it is, if you pour a beer and you see that like that thick head at the top, it's one of those proteins that makes that head last.
Okay.
So mainly that's a it's a protein chain, and it's found in basically three ingredients, and there's a bunch of different subclasses of these ingredients. But like, if you look at barley, wheat, or rye, you
Okay.
find gluten in those. And of those three, one of those is really interesting.
Why so? And which one?
Rye, actually.
Rye. Okay. Now I know rye from rye bread and rye whiskey.
Yeah, and you can get rye as a an adjunct ingredient in a bunch of beers too. I've had it in a few beers. I tried making a saison beer using some rye at one time, and the rye ingredient itself, I'm not a fan of rye. I know your wife Kat is
Oh, yes, she
very much
was.
so.
Oh, she's.
I can't take it. It's a little too. It's a harsh kind of spiciness to me that I can't really like enumerate very well as far as terms. But it's just like I taste it and it doesn't appeal to me.
Gotcha. But when I got the gin and all that stuff I got from last week for those cocktails, I actually bought myself, my wife a bottle of rye because I knew she'd like
Sure.
it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You got to score points with a woman.
Oh, you do.
It's
You know, she
we
knows when I'm asleep and where the iron skillets are. So it's kind of important I keep her on my good side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned that early.
No, I forget exactly how long you two have been married, but I'm coming up on 10 years now, and I think it's this weekend, actually.
24. 34 years.
Well, 10 right here. So that's one of those, you got to keep them happy. That's one of those things you figure out, or you don't make the double digit
Yeah,
numbers.
my anniversary was this last month, so yeah. So
Well,
I
cheers
yeah,
to
thank
both of
you.
us.
Cheers. I made that. You know, I used to call it my weekly evaluation. She's asked me to stop that.
Yearly
Yearly
evaluation,
evaluation, yeah.
yes.
Anyway, so making the
So
beer
the unique one of those three between
is right.
right is rye. And why is rye interesting? Because rye is it's considered what's called a secondary crop. And the weird thing is the theory that has it's not fully accepted, but it is kind of the one that is getting a lot of traction right now is that the reason rye is a crop, or it started as a crop, was that it actually started as a weed.
Okay.
Wheat and barley are annual crops. You have to replant those,
Yeah.
right? Rye, wild rye, is a perennial crop.
Okay.
But there is this thought that rye did what's called Pavlovian mimicry.
Okay, I have no idea what that is.
So if we talk about like mimicry in the animal kingdom,
Yeah.
what we're usually talking about there is what's called Batesian mimicry.
Okay.
So the classic idea is that hoverfly is completely harmless, right? But it has black and yellow stripes, so it looks like a wasp or a bee. The idea here is that not all hoverflies were black and yellow striped at one point, but one of them got this mutation that made them black and yellow striped. And birds that know, hey, let's not mess with that bee and or wasp because they're not fun to deal with, went, okay, well, that guy I'm going to leave alone. And so more of those hoverflies survived to make baby hoverflies to
Okay,
spread
and
that
so
mutation.
yeah, the
That's Batesian mimicry, and it kind of goes from there. The idea of Pavlovian mimicry is that at one point or another, there was a weird mutation from a rye grain that made it look a lot like a wheat or a barley stalk. And the time to winnow out weeds in planting is when everything's small, right?
yeah.
Because if it gets big, then it's just more of a pain in the ass to get the roots out, and it's harder to separate from the full grown plants.
Yeah.
And so as time went on, these rye grains mutated in such a way that not only did they look more like the wheat that we were trying to separate them out from, but they also mutated in such a way that they became annuals themselves. Our domesticated rye is an annual, while wild rye is a perennial, and their seeds got bigger and more pronounced like wheat.
So
They
useful as a grain.
and more or less as a side effect of our agricultural practice, basically domesticated itself by turning into something we would want. And then we just started planting it because in like more mountainous regions or more harsher climates, it survives better to the point where a lot of like, the Czech Republic and into like Central and Eastern Europe, there's a lot of rye bread products because rye is just easier to grow in certain parts of that
Okay.
area. So it had a hand in domesticating itself. And there are a number of other examples of this that are really interesting. Like there is a type of grass that looks almost indistinguishable from rice shoots in the rice paddies and stuff in Southeast Asia. And so it has gotten to the point where it has evolved, well, it not really evolved, it has been selected against to look anything other than, these early rice shoots. And it, progresses itself. There's another case where flax seeds have a there's a false flax plant that has actually mutated to where we were at one point using mechanical winnowing to separate the false flax seeds from the real flax seeds because they're different densities. One of them will throw further than the other, and the flat of the false flax had a mutation that made it to the point where it was getting to be the same density as the real flax because those were the only seeds getting replanted. And so now the false flax plants and the real flax plants, you can't winnow that way because they're all the same density, because that's the only one that survived. And it's just this wild thing that, yeah, no, some of the stuff that we grew intentionally. Some of the stuff we grew kind of pulled a fast one on us and we decided it was useful. And rye is one of those that we decided was useful. So anyway, that's just a fun sideways thing.
Yeah. Thank you for your science hour here. Actually, no, and I'm not opposed to this. I like learning about these things.
Yeah, this is just a weird thing that, you know, this kind of came up and it was theorized upon and has been disagreed upon and is not confirmed, but there's largely this thought that this is how that happened. And I just happened to hear about this while I was doing research on, you know, gluten-containing grains and stuff this week, and it kind of like, wow, that's a weird, kind of funny
That's a weird
symmetry.
story.
Yeah.
Okay, now what we're looking at right now is non-gluten
Right. So we want to talk
beers
about
and meads
right.
and lagers.
Right. Grains that we can use to make a beer or braggot that don't contain gluten. So I think you highlighted things like oats and
Rice
rice.
and I don't remember the other one I said. It was
Well, other things we could add here are like buckwheat or millet or sorghum, for example.
okay.
And the
Corn was the other one I said.
corn, yes. Corn is another one that obviously, and depending on the type of beer you're brewing, you can absolutely get those ingredients used in those already. Corn was a very popular one if you're looking at pre-prohibition lagers, because before prohibition, corn was a very plentiful agreement, plentiful ingredient.
How much we had?
Half a glass.
Yeah, two fingers, half a finger.
Gonna edit that. Before prohibition, corn was a really plentiful ingredient, especially in the Midwest, because we grow a ton of corn here, right? And you know, you get sugar from corn, you get sugar from wheat, you get sugar from barley. What do you got the most of? Corn.
Corn.
So let's throw 20, 30% by corn into this beer because we can get it and we can get it cheap,
Yeah.
and we can get alcohol out of that, right? So, you see, Japanese lagers will have rice in them
Yeah.
easily. And you know, there is, we talked mostly about when we were doing that Christmas stout bracket,
Yeah.
we added some flaked oats to that. But you see some level of oats in a number of like Irish or British beers, usually the flaked kind for body, but sometimes, you know, it's just what they have on hand.
Okay.
So you'll see a level of this all by itself. The thing is, the trouble is that you need to have the enzymes that break down those sugars, the starches into sugars. And
Is gluten one of those
no, gluten is a protein, not an
Okay.
enzyme. But the problem is that it's the same problem with making an all wheat beer. Those enzymes are naturally occurring on barley. They're not really naturally occurring anywhere else. So if you're making a, you know, whether it's a wheat beer or you're using a corn mash to get, you know, a bourbon or a whiskey or something, you got to have a little barley in there, or you've got to supplement those enzymes.
Okay, if they're gluten intolerant, you can't substitute barley though.
Therein lies the rub. So there are actually a couple different approaches we can take here,
Okay.
and the question is, know your audience and how much gluten is too much gluten. Because up until a number of years ago, the FDA allowed a small amount of gluten to be labeled as gluten-free. And that was roughly 20 parts per million gluten-free, for gluten within a beverage.
Okay.
Very small amount. But there was some concern that people that were gluten sensitive were consuming a product they believed to be gluten-free and still having glutinous reactions to it. Which I think is, you know, it's valid. If you're looking for something and you can't trust a label to say gluten free, and you've got to read the ingredients list of every last little thing you consume to make sure that what you're consuming is gluten free, that is,
No fair.
yeah, that's a substandard way of handling your nutrition, right?
Okay, fair enough.
you know.
But as makers of things like this, we have absolute control.
Right. We have options. And maybe in the case of like my wife's friend, who is not like, she doesn't have celiacs and she can have some gluten things, but it's kind of a, you know, is it worth it to have a pizza this week? I'm rolling the dice. Or, you know, if I have a little bit of gluten tonight, you know, and I don't have any more gluten for another 3 or 4 days, I'll be okay, kind of a situation. Then we can probably get away with just the, you know, the
25
sub
per million.
20 parts per million, right? And here's the cool thing. We have treatments available. You can go to Bock's and Barleycorn and get that can turn any standard gluten beer into an usually under 20 parts per million.
Gluten-free beer.
Gluten reduced is the term the FDA likes now
Okay.
because of this issue. It's called ClarityFirm.
Okay.
And it was not designed to make beers gluten reduced. This is just a side effect of it. The idea is, as the name implies, it's to help clarity because if you have a very protein heavy beer, what you end up with is a very cloudy beer.
Yeah.
So to make it clearer, they break down some of the proteins. The side effect of this is that gluten is one of those proteins it breaks down. And generally speaking, based on Scott Labs testing, Scott Labs is like, they are one of the biggest producers of the homebrew and pro brew chemicals and additives and extra things to add to your brew labs in the country, if not the world, right?
I'm kind of grinning because how many times we've heard the side effect of this is exactly what we want.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is not what it was designed for in the first place, but the happy accident is that, you know, if you're just looking for a gluten-reduced beer, you can make any kind of beer you want and put a little vial of ClarityFirm in it during the brewing process. It's going to take care of most of the gluten for you. You're going to be left with a little bit. And as long as you're not drinking your ass off daily, you're probably not going to have a gluten problem. Assuming you're just gluten, you know, sensitive and not
Okay.
like severely. And
Hey, first of all,
again,
that's unbelievably amazing
right.
because the side effect doing something that specific to help people out is just cool.
Yeah, no, this is
Yeah.
a great thing that, you know, this was discovered by accident. And I think I can't be certain if they still do it, but at one time Scott Labs was like, yeah, if you guys want to send us a sample, we can test for parts per billion for gluten in your beer to test it, make sure that this is doing it. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, weird, but
Right.
kudos to the public, helping out the public. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
public
great.
benefit. And I'm pretty sure that was aimed more at, you know, the pro brewers that are making gluten reduced or gluten free beer or whatever, than it was the home brewer. But I'm, you know, science is for everybody. Science is to the public benefit. So I'm pretty sure they're willing to take a sample and go, okay, well, you know, here's
At your worst case, call. What are they going to say? No. But we don't do that anymore. Whatever. But okay, now let's say we need a gluten-free, not reduced beer. Okay, you can. We said we could use corn, oat, sorghum, rice,
Millet?
millet. Is there anything else I can? I can't think of anything else right off the top of my head.
Buckwheat.
Buckwheat. Okay. Buckwheat, I thought was a wheat, though.
As the name would imply, it's a wheat, but it's not in the same family at all.
Okay,
It's
so
one of those, kind of like the rye we were talking about. It looked like wheat, so it got named a wheat, but it's not wheat at all.
okay, fair enough. So buckwheat. So if you want to make a gluten-free beer to go to a Braggot for the mead beer combination, you can. How would you? Let's just take something basic. Let's take oat or rice, so they have no gluten. How does it ferment the same way?
Generally, yes. Now, here's the thing. If you go to Bock's and Barleycorn tomorrow and say, hey, I want to make a gluten-free Braggot, sadly, you don't have a lot of options there. They have flaked rice, they have flaked oats. The flaked part of that makes a lot of those sugars unfermentable, like we talked about before.
Okay.
That makes the it adds mouthfeel because it's not fermentable, so those sugars stay in suspension. As far as ingredients you could throw into a beer or a Braggot
I know they don't have any
situation,
rice or millet.
rice and millet are Yeah, no. They have cracked corn because there are a number of people that buy it for distilling purposes. They have in the liquid malt extracts category, they have sorghum syrup, which is a really popular one for this category. That's probably the why it's the one they carry.
Okay, fair enough.
So realistically, you could make a beer-like product just with sorghum syrup. You could make a beer-like Braggot with sorghum syrup and honey and some hops, or some.
Or Gruit alternative.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah, if you
because
want
if we would jump back a couple weeks here.
right, exactly. Yeah, you could totally do that. There are not a lot of options at the average homebrew store for gluten-free free as opposed to reduced, but you could do that. The
And
trick
if
is,
they could order in for you a 50-pound bag of something, but I'd be like, what, 25 pounds of whatever beer?
so yeah, no, if we'll get to other options for base malts in a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, they could probably find somebody that is milling other grains and order in a bag if you asked for it. But those bags come in 50-pound quantities. And for a 5-gallon batch of beer as a base malt, you're talking 7 to 10 pounds of that base malt to make a 5-gallon batch of beer. So realistically, you're talking about out of a 50-pound bag, 25 plus gallons of beer. If this is what you need to be able to drink beer, that's probably a great investment, right?
Yeah, but it's still a lot.
That's a lot to handle. It's a lot to store.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be perfectly airtight, but it has to be pretty tight
It has to be at
because
least rodent type.
rodent and bug type.
Yeah,
Tight,
tight,
yeah.
yeah. So, okay. You mentioned malt. Is malt gluten? Does that malt have a gluten ratio?
Malt is a very broad category. Malt is.
I mean, honestly, the only malt I've ever used is malt vinegar for fish.
Right. And well, that malt vinegar, that's beer that didn't get turned into beer.
Okay, fair enough.
The malt as a category is it's a product. The idea of when we say something is a malt, from a like a beer or homebrew perspective, what that means is that they took a grain, they let it sprout just a little bit to where like that little first tendril of a stem came out of it, and then they stopped that by usually baking it. And by baking it, that's at temperature. The amount of time you're baking it, the temperature you're baking it at, that really depends on the kind of malt you're making. So if we're talking about like a base malt, like a pale or a pilsner malt, that's probably at a low temperature for a fairly long period of time. If we're talking about some of like when we were talking about stouts a couple weeks ago, some of the more like color and flavor malts, like the chocolate or the Crystal 80 or whatever we used, those are probably at a higher temperature for a shorter period of time.
Okay.
It's kind of like a Maillard reaction. How dark do we want to get this? What flavors do we want to promote from this? All of those are malts
Okay, fair.
or
I thought
malted
malt
barley.
was its own thing, to be honest, so.
When we say malt, what we're talking about is the process of basically turning getting that sprouted seed of a grain to germinate so that the starches inside it become available to us.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so I didn't realize malt was from grain. I didn't know what malt was. I never
Right.
really questioned it,
Well, and
so.
if you go to Bucks and Barleycorn and you're buying stuff, the thing that you're going to see attached as the name malt all the time is like a dry malt extract or a liquid malt extract. And the thing is, yeah, no, to get that, you make a malt and then you turn that malt into a you do the mash and the sparge step of the brew in the factory. And whether you're getting a dry or a liquid, you're basically either getting like a caramel syrup for the malt extract, or you're getting a powder for the malt extract that you'll add to water later to turn into a beer.
Gotcha.
So, and
I'm learning a lot about beer making last three or 4 weeks here.
right. Well, and I forget exactly how it works, but if you go to like, a soda shop or something and you ask for a, chocolate malt, that malt powder, I'm pretty sure is one of those ingredients in that the malt like milkshake thing you get. And I'm pretty sure that's kind of like a body and sweetness kind of a an ad there. But I could be 100% wrong on that because I don't know crap about old school,
Yeah,
fountain
the
stuff.
malted soda
You're
fountain thing, yeah.
right. My experience at this ends when you leave the homebrew store.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so by what you said, you can get different flavors and different notes from various malts as well as the various grains. So we're gonna do you use does a malt have gluten though, per se?
It depends on what grain the malt came from. If the malt came from barley, wheat, or rye, which are the three primary things we make beer from,
Yes.
absolutely yes.
Any of those others that we talked about earlier? Not so
Millet,
much.
sorghum, yeah, they do not form. If they don't form gluten in the process of becoming a seed or growing from a little shoot to something that will have seeds and like droop over and things like that.
Then no.
Right, yeah, there's the gluten does not form independent of that.
Okay, let's dial this back. You have a friend who's gluten sensitive, by a fact. So if we were to make her a gluten-free beer, you take one of the five grains we talked about, the millet, the rice, oat,
Corn,
corn, sorghum.
right, we have those options.
And I don't know what else there's out there. It's just only five I can think about off the top of my head. And grab a malt from those things and hops or gruit substitute,
Yes.
and you can make a beer
Absolutely. Or Bryant.
or a braggot that they can have as a reduced, at least reduced, if not gluten.
Well, if we're using one of those grains that does not have any gluten in it in the first place, then absolutely.
Then no gluten.
No gluten at all.
Okay.
If she can tolerate the occasional amount of a very reduced amount of gluten, we could make any beer in the world and just dab in some of that Clarity Firm stuff, and she'd probably be fine. If she's just having a bottle or two on a Friday after work, hanging out with her friends or her boyfriend or something,
Why not?
right,
And I'll
then
be honest here, I'm a hard cider guy.
there's nothing wrong with it, and they have a pretty good hard cider at this brewery.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice, but the fact that you're at a beer festival and you can only drink the cider or the wine
It
because they
says a
have
lot.
the far tent at the side, it's like,
The token tent, as it were, yeah.
right, yeah, the for the wife that got dragged here and didn't like beer.
Yeah. Or in my case, maybe the husband that was dragged there and can't do beer.
Well, you weren't there, so
Yeah, well,
sorry.
But gotta stand up for the guys here a little bit, guys. So come on.
I'm sure they had some very nice German beers. I was just a little busy with the. I'm sorry. I'm sure they had some nice German wines there. I'm just a little busy with the beer.
To
But
each.
so here's the problem, though, that if we go to Bock's and Barleycorn tomorrow, we've got a limited number of options. We could get the sorghum syrup, and the sorghum syrup has already been processed, so it is sugar ready. We could use the sorghum syrup, dark liquid malt extract, and we could put some honey in that and some hops, and we could have a beer-ish braggot that does not have any gluten in it. Easy,
Okay.
right? If we wanted to get a little bit more involved, we could get some corn, and we would need to get some enzymes. Glucoamylase, beta amylase are the two that we need to look for. They totally have those because, hey, the guys that make corn whiskey, they also need those
Yeah, so
because,
and they have those.
right. But if we want to make a more involved gluten-free beer that's a lot more like a regular beer,
Unfortunately, we can't go to Bacchus in this
yeah,
case.
that I have found. Just kind of poking around, I found a really cool website that it's another small company that I don't mind saying, hey, they have some cool stuff. I cannot see with the breadth of the amount of grains that they have here that being like that demanded for Bacchus to carry.
Okay, well, Bacchus is trying to get the biggest market they can, and that's where we go.
Right.
But if you are gluten intolerant, another source would be nice.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this is glutenfreehomebrewing.com. They have millet, rice, buckwheat, oats, all kinds of stuff, but they have these grains milled the same way that barley at Bacchus is. I mean, you can't even get wheat at Bacchus with as many different milling temperatures and like conditions as you can here for the oats and the millet and the rice and stuff. They have like a Vienna malt or a pale malt or a Munich malt for these different grains that do not contain gluten at all anywhere. And so, yeah, you're buying, 2 or 5 pounds of each at a time.
25 or
Right.
50.
Yeah. And so this is in one of those extremes where you can't have gluten at all, but you want to have a beer that tastes a lot more like a beer than you've had anywhere else. And the Clarity Firm hack isn't going to do it for you. You have an option here.
And that's great. And then if you want to go into the meat section, because you can dab all the meat you want is gluten free because you
Oh,
don't need
yeah.
meat, but you can have your beer braget with. You can have the best of both worlds right there.
Right. So for my money, for my preference, for my experimentation, honestly, that might be a long step. I might just go to Bacchus and get the sorghum syrup and some honey and
And
some
some corn.
hops.
And maybe some corn.
Maybe some corn if I want to go the extra step. But the basic stuff I can get at Bacchus to make a gluten-free braget for my wife's friend, who's also my friend, of
Yeah,
course, because
of course. Because how dare you?
So that she can join us for a beer-like substance and enjoy something tasty and carbonated.
Even better that you made for her. And there you go. I mean, so now, mind you, this is an episode for people who are in that 7%, 6, 7%.
Not necessarily. I mean, there are a number of people that are not in that 6-7%, but are still looking to reduce the amount of gluten they're consuming.
Fair enough.
It's there are a number of people that think that the protein structure of gluten is kind of just not great for the human digestive system. It's not ideal, but it's there. There are a number of people, like I myself, a number of times have done like reduced carb kind of diets where like processed carbs, like things with bread or processed stuff like that, were right out. And so if I was going to consume a grain-based thing, it was a lot more like, like a quinoa kind of a situation than
Yeah,
bread.
or amaranth.
Something that was more like it looked like a grain when I was done with it, rather than being a soft, pillowy thing that went in
Yeah,
my mouth easily.
and I had a loaf of amaranth bread, which is an ancient Egyptian wheat version, which is apparently good for a lot of things. I don't know about gluten, but a slice of bread was a meal in and of itself because it was heavy.
I believe that. No, the another reason that the bread that we consume on a daily basis is so soft and pillowy is that gluten, because the same gluten that gives us the structure to have that thick head of pillowy stuff at the top of a beer bottle is the same gluten structure that lets us get these little like pockets of air as the yeast hydrates and
And
farts
the
out
high
carbon dioxide.
rising bread we get.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I kind of like that.
No, the process of kneading and shaping bread like that is to develop those long strands of gluten. The window pane test, you can only do that when you have good gluten development.
Okay.
So it's in the same idea. It's just knowing how to do it. And we are not a bread making podcast,
No,
but there are
we're not really a beer making podcast, but
no, but
there's avenues.
right. And I, Braggot is a kind of beer. And if you're gonna get into Braggot, you kind of got to know how to make beer to make a decent Braggot. Lay of the land. That said, I'm sure there are hours and hours of podcast material on making a gluten-free bread that has the same kind of rise and texture as a non-gluten-free bread.
I'm actually gonna have to look that up because I would like to see that happen. I'll
Yeah,
be all
right.
blunt. I really would.
I know there are a number of different ingredients that go into it, and you kind of have to get to, some different binders and things like that. It's a combination of stuff, but there are a number of people that are not able to process gluten well and have made steps to be able to enjoy the stuff that they want. Like it's got to be a special kind of hell to not be able to get like to be a kid and not get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich,
Yeah, that would kind of ruin my childhood personally. But yeah, but okay, but I'm glad, this is not something that I'm personally going to go into. I'll be blunt about it.
But I'm glad it's out there.
Right.
I'm glad we did this.
Well, and I would probably not look at this myself if I didn't know somebody. And I will not, I will be 100% blunt. She's also a fan of my beak. Numerous times she said, hey, that blueberry you made with the Clyke yeast, best mead ever. Nothing you've made has come close to that. This is that close, though.
I'm sending her mead. I'm now in a competition with you for mead. I'm not going to win, but I'm in a competition.
You never know. I mean, that objectively, the blueberry blossom traditional with Kike yeast was a very good mead. I'm not sure that was my best. I think the lavender with Kike yeast was my best, but.
Oh, well, yeah. Sounds like we need to do work to run, you. We may need to call her over. Try these meads. You're not walking home.
I'm pretty sure she'd be down.
Okay, fair enough. Try these meads. Don't leave a full bottle.
I don't want to speak for her, but yeah, that wouldn't be a hard sell.
I can't tell you how many people will say, I'm making this mead. Well, you need taste testers. Yeah, we hear it all the time.
Yes.
And I'm not opposed to it. I got people, would you like to taste this one for me? I've rarely had people say, no, not really. I've never had that actually.
More often than not, you know, my wife and I have a regular group of friends over, a couple groups of friends over to just play games and hang out and stuff like that. And it's like, hey guys, welcome to the house. You guys want to try the XYZ mead that I made, you know, last month? Okay.
Yeah, sure. No, we're down. And then that's it, you know. So I'm okay. Again, I'm going to say, this is not, I'm going to say, this is not going to reach my to-do list.
Right.
But I'm glad we did it.
Yes.
But this is good.
I hope this is useful for some people.
Yeah,
maybe not for everybody. Like, this is, I would kind of rate this as in that, the microbiology one we did a few weeks back, a few months back, maybe. A
couple months, I think.
Yeah. I think it's about 2 months now.
God.
These days are.
Yeah.
When you spend your weekend getting drunk, it's kind of.
Things get blurry.
The things we do for you guys.
Yeah, we put this stuff out here. You know, the sacrifices we make, man.
Yeah, but no, like I was saying, I think this is in that same line as the microbiology where you may not use this, you may not need this, and you may not think you will ever use this, but maybe at some point, you know, hey, you're dating a new girl, but she's got celiacs. Oh my God, how can I make a mead with some hops that's beer-y and not just a hop mead? So that she can enjoy something beery, and I can score some points with her. Hey, let's go back and look at that episode from Mead House.
Hey, Mead House had a podcast. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
And if it helps you, great. You know, let us know. If it doesn't, don't let us know. We don't need to know you didn't help you. But honestly, guys, here's to 300. We're going to make it to 300 pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to be awesome.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
And, you know, now, just to, you know, to spill the tea a little bit here, we now have a mixing board that enable us to talk to people at remote.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're working on it.
We've got some equipment. Now we just need to learn how to use the freaking equipment.
Yeah, let's make sure that we can test this and make sure it works before we get out into the wide world with it. But we may be getting interviews again.
Yeah, which I'm actually really looking forward to because there's so many people I want to talk to out there.
For sure.
I met when I was at Pennsylvania Fair last year, a year ago, there was, I mean, I could not walk through the fair they had in Pennsylvania at Mount Hope without tripping over somebody. Oh, yeah, there's this mead maker over this way, always on the East Coast.
Yeah.
But, you know, oh, yeah, have you heard about this mead maker? I'm sitting here. I don't recall ever mentioning I do mead. How do you, do I have a tattoo or something? but it'll be awesome to talk to other people in the field to see get their take on things.
Absolutely.
Because community makes us all the better, guys. Mm-hmm. There's so much we can learn from each other. It's awesome.
Yeah. No, and you know, You could take the stance of, hey, professional mead maker, what does it take to go from a home mead maker to a professional mead maker? I don't know that I'm all that interested in that so much as,
I'm not.
Hey, you know, what are you willing to tell our home mead makers that can give them a little bit of edge on what they're doing, make it just that much better?
Yeah, you know, honestly,
kind of where I'm more interested.
If I had a professional mead making house, barn, studio, building, whatever, we would just probably just sit there and do this, making me just for us.
Probably.
You know what I mean? You know, call friends over. Hey, I got excess meat. Can you help take care of this for me? You know,
I mean, we'd probably have to take donations because I don't know if you've ever priced a full drum, like a 55-gallon drum of honey.
I have not, but you know, the crosses we bear, man. The crosses we bear.
I'm just saying, you get a 100-gallon fermenter going, and you realize it's going to take like 5 or 6 of those guys.
Yeah, there are worse fates in my world than worrying about that.
I probably understated the size of that fermenter actually at 100 gallons, but no, you get a large fermenter going, it's going to take 5 or 6 barrels to make a batch of mead and go, oh shit.
Yeah, but think of how many types of mead we can make from that one batch.
You know, something to be said for that.
Yeah, you know?
Something to be said for that.
I'm not, that it's not as scary to me as you think it is. It should be, but.
Well, you bear in mind, we've got to have secondary containers to split those, to make those different batches, but.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, we're talking about, it's just more investment.
Oh, well, yeah. The crosses I bear, man. I'm still not afraid. Jeff, great being here.
Chris, lovely to have you.
Guys, happy meeting. Take care of yourselves. See you next time.
See ya.